Recently, the Trump administration began exploring rolling back the 2014 Obama guidelines for school discipline. Now, they were put in place to try to reduce the documented racial disparities in how students are disciplined, and Minneapolis has become ground zero for that debate. Last year, black students made up just 41% of the student population there, but 76% of the students suspended. In one school, black students were 338% more likely to be suspended than their white peers, according to the New York Times. And in February, the Minnesota Department of Human Rights notified 43 school districts that their suspension rates for nonviolent offenses suggested discrimination, and those suspensions started in preschool. We're going to speak to two educators. First, a former Minneapolis superintendent. She is African American and says she tried to address the so-called discipline gap with things like restorative justice, a chance to make up for behavior, rather than expulsions. But she resigned after the backlash. Bernadia Johnson is now a professor of education at Minnesota State University. She joins us by Skype. Professor Bernadia, welcome.
Thank you for having me.
Bernadia, as a woman of color, this was not a surprise to you. You say this is something talked about around the dining room table. But as an educator, what were you seeing in the way young black kids and white kids were approached when it comes to discipline?
So if you were a white student and you were being naughty, you were called precocious, bright, someone who is inquisitive. And you were a black child, it was everything that you would think of as negative, like you're a thug, you know, you're just not meant for school or whatever the case may be. And if you go deeper around that, is that they already determined what the student's future would be. So you saw some of those differences and how people would explain away behaviors.
Well, you've given examples, young black kids, ninth graders who, you know, had some playful jabs, but it escalated into a fight. Neither hurt, no property damage. They were suspended. Separate incident, another school. Another white middle school student became upset and kicked in a door.
You know, they gave him a little time out. But I know that if there had been a black child that destroyed property, he or she would have been suspended. And the reason I know, because I reviewed every suspension in Minneapolis public schools.
Well, you know that there are people listening here and thinking, it's not that they're disproportionately punished. It's that they disproportionately misbehave, young blacks, more than their white peers. But you point to research that shows that's not true.
It's not the case. It's not the case. It's how we view the behavior and how we decide upon the consequences that are different, which ends up making the data look like black kids are misbehaving more. I'm saying that we don't call behavior out equally when we see it.
So, for instance, there's a North Carolina study that found that there was equal use of cell phones, but 8 times higher punishment for black students. Black students were suspended at a rate 6 times higher than white students for dress code violations. So what did you decide to try to do?
So my ultimate goal was to change the trajectory of the child's experience. I wanted more engaged students. I wanted students to have trusting relationships with adults. I wanted them to participate in their educational experience. And I wanted them to be looked at as human beings and not as some anomaly. But what was most surprising to me is when I looked at the suspensions of preschoolers and kindergarten and first grade students. And that's when I decided to put a moratorium on suspending kids for nonviolent behaviors, especially our littlest learners. All our kids are learning what it means to become an adult. And our job is to socialize them into the school environment so that they know what's expected of them. And sometimes I've seen that students have been suspended because of inconsistent expectations among teachers, among the schools.
But sometimes students are a problem, and I want to get to that. But I just want to stay with, so your plan was no suspensions for little kids, which, you know, that kind of rejection at that age, you know, those on your side say, if we're supposed to be educating them and socializing them, why would you send them out of the building? They should be in the building for that. And you give an example, for instance, of, you know, if there's a no hats in schools rule, what would you say rather than suspensions?
I've actually gone to the student, pulled him or her aside and said, you know, one of the rules that we agreed upon is that you don't wear hats in school. And invariably, you'll find out that the kid maybe was getting her hair braided the night before and it wasn't finished, and they didn't want to be embarrassed. So they rather face the wrath of the teacher, the school, than embarrass themselves by not looking put together like they want to. And so in those cases, I've actually said to the teachers of the kid and to the student is that today you can wear your hat. You have a special pass from me to be able to do that. And I think that's all about relationships too, connecting with students and discipline. is not about punishment, it's about learning.
That's Bernadia Johnson, now a professor of education at Minnesota State University, but the former superintendent in Minneapolis who tried to bring a change in thinking to discipline for kids of color. Federal investigators in 2014 found that a black second grade student was suspended for poking another student with a pencil, but a white second grader who threw a rock, hit a student, broke a teacher's glasses, was not suspended. Just last month, the Minnesota Department of Human Rights found 43 school districts and charter schools with suspension rates for nonviolent offenses that indicated discriminatory practices. I want to bring in Jeffrey Parker now. He's a special ed teacher in St. Paul, Minnesota. Jeff, you were hearing the former superintendent say that she thought some of this was because teachers sometimes bring a mindset to school. Do you find yourself ever catching yourself saying, wait a second, am I reacting more or differently because this child is of color? Are you seeing, you know, other teachers do it?
Oh, yes. It's prevalent. And I think it's, to a certain degree, that's human nature. We're all going to make judgments. Perception is what makes misbehavior misbehavior. And to deny that, I think, would be to miss a very, very important point. I think it bears mentioning that I am a black man, and that creates an entirely different set of thoughts and expectations in my mind that I have to address daily.
Well, first of all, we had no idea that you're African American. So tell us more. What are those unique thoughts and expectations?
In the back of my mind, I hear my parents talking about the idea of behavior. My dad used to say, you got to keep your nose clean. If you're not going to keep your nose clean, keep a handkerchief, meaning you need to be able to clean up your mess. Mm. I was taught how to do that. Not everyone was taught how to do that. And I would hear a lot of black colleagues and a lot of black parents putting even more pressure on students to do, quote unquote, the right thing. They also wanted some pretty severe penalties for wrongdoing.
So, Jeff, it sounds as if you're saying that there is both bias, you know, that you've seen, but also maybe a sense of, as a black teacher, wanting to be firmer with the black students because they do have so many societal challenges. You want to help them to succeed.
Yes. And again, I have to be aware of that on a daily basis. Our communities also have that reflection of wrongdoing needs to be punished. The entire restorative justice movement that started in the 90s kind of began on that premise. Not what can we do to punish wrongdoing, but how can we respond to wrongdoing in a way that's going to benefit the individual and the community?
Well, you know, some schools have started restorative justice courts so that kids who have wronged each other can come together in a court with their peers and resolve it that way. So they're actually working it out instead of banishing one or the other. Bernadia Johnson, I want to bring you back in. Again, former superintendent and now a professor of education who tried to bring some reforms to close the discipline gap. That's fascinating because this is not discriminatory in the way that we think of it.
I hear what Jeff is saying and I understand that. I agree with Jeff. White parents and black parents have different ideas about discipline and they're strict disciplinarians, but we're not talking about that. We're talking about the biases that a teacher brings into the room in the context of teaching students. What is it he wants for them and how is he going to run his learning environment? I bet you'd hardly ever send a kid out. And when they go out, you have to repair those relationships. The kid did it. You suspended him. He's back and you're still angry. You got to let that go.
Well, you tried to do this. You tried to bring in tactics like restorative justice and restorative schools, circles between students and teachers.
All these different strategies that don't let a kid off the hook. We're not saying that kids should not have consequences, but they should be consequences that are relative to what happened. So what people would suggest now is that we can't discipline kids. Yes, you can. You can teach kids appropriate behaviors. And you can hold them accountable to that. But sending a kid home is not teaching a child. If they're out of the learning environment, how can they excel? How can they grasp the academic work that you are giving to them?
Well, but what do you say to fellow teachers who are going to Washington to lobby the Trump administration to roll back the Obama-era rules that were meant to close this discipline gap? They say they want to be able to suspend. They want to be able to expel. And they say they're not racist or biased. But they say they have violence in their classroom. One of the teachers, I'm sure you know, Debbie York, She retired after being injured when a first grader pushed her. She says teachers need options for those kids that go beyond getting them therapy or some kind of a rehabilitative courtroom.
There are students sometimes need to be removed from the environment if it's unsafe and they make it unsafe for others. And again, my emphasis was on nonviolent. And the fact of the matter is, besides the restorative justice and other ways of addressing this, we also partnered with the county, Hennepin County, and put mental health support and services in all of our K-8 schools and all of our middle schools. So leaders have to think about different ways of reacting and responding as well.
That's Bernadia Johnson, now a professor of education at Minnesota State University, former superintendent who tried to institute changes in that school district. Also, Jeffrey Parker, special education teacher in St. Paul, Minnesota. Thank you both for talking to us about it.
Thank you for having me.
You're certainly welcome.
So, teachers, have you recognized a bias in your disciplining? Or do you resent these findings? And is there a better way to discipline all kids than sending them away from school? Or is that sometimes the safest choice? Weigh in, hereandnow.org.